Welcome to the Mock Stars Podcast. I am Menace, one of your hosts, and I'm here with Flash. What is up, my dude?
Nothing much, man. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I have a cup of coffee. I have a cardamom knot in front of me as well. I'm living the life. And a Dr. P in the wings. Because if you didn't know, this is the Mock Stars Podcast, the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. Oh, yeah, dude. It's a beautiful day. And it only gets better when you realize that we are at exactly 420 subscribers on YouTube. Exactly.
Heyo.
Thank you all for the support. If you'd like to support us and you're not supporting us so far, you can find us on YouTube where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. You can also find us on all major podcasting platforms where you can leave us a 5-star review to make us look super duper cool for the new people who find us. Help that algorithm. Don Cheadle in the house. Whoop whoop. I'm trying to push the envelope for how much Don Cheadle I can include in our content before his agent reaches out.
I think we're safe for a while.
Yeah, like for one of our bits today, I'm going to push the envelope on, you know, on Dr. Pepper and see if they, you know, send us a cease and desist. But we'll get there. We'll get there. Don Cheadle, thanks for listening. We know you're out there listening to this podcast. So if you're listening to this, just know that you're in great company with Don Cheadle, LeBron's fake family, and, you know, the Iron Giant, Vin Diesel. All the gears in his mouth. Oh, you can also support us on Patreon by becoming an official Pepperhead. For $3 a month, you can support the show and have your name turned Dr. Pepper Red on the Discord server. You can also become a 2-liter tier supporter like Definitely Jeremy and Pool Boy Barry. And you get 2 entries into each of our bi-weekly giveaways and early access to our card of the week videos, which drop on the Patreon platform exclusively. They'll come out a week after, but you get early access to them on Patreon. And we've got Ravenlift hanging out in the Mock Stars Lounge, presented by Dr. Pepper. Dr. Pepper is not affiliated with the lounge and does not choose to acknowledge it or its existence. The card of the week. The Mock Stars card of the week, presented by Dr. Pepper, is Food Chain. This card, Flash, make you aware of this, but I've had my mind stuck on Food Chain all week.
I mean, it for years, honestly. You love a Food Chain deck.
I hate it as well. I also hate it. And
okay.
It's, you know, I like it when it includes red, but red has become, I don't know, the weakest color in Magic since the banning of Dockside. So, like, I'm building Helga. As you all know, I'm going to tournament on Sunday. I'll report back next week with the results, with my findings. But on Sunday, going to tournament with this Helga build that I've put together. And it is a Bant Food Chain deck. And you would imagine, with the addition of blue and white to Food Chain, that it would be a little bit easier to assemble. But Food Chain. Love it because it wins the game. Hate it because it's so hard to assemble sometimes, or it's too easily telegraphed. Anyway, if you would like to hear our expanded thoughts on Food Chain, you can check out our Card of the Week episode that'll be coming out for early access on Patreon. At the same time that this episode drops. So yeah, sweet deal. All right. This week on the show, we are talking about the top three cards for 2025. The cards that we believe are either going to have a resurgence or have arrived on the scene recently and are going to be most impactful for CEDH in 2025. So get ready for some hot takes. Prepare yourself. Get your oven mitts, because you're going to get burned on this one. Flash, Rev Tithe Extractor might be the biggest miss that I had on my top 10 cards of 2024. This card is nuts. And before we started recording, I asked, have you seen this? Have you seen this? You know, like, and I think people have seen the price tag on it. And it's a $35 card. But it took me a while to actually read what it does and realize how good it is. Have you ever seen a Ragavan that can trigger three times in a single combat? Well, that's exactly what Rev does. If you're unfamiliar with Rev, it's three and a black for a human rogue that whenever you attack, target creature gains death touch until end of turn. Whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, create a treasure token, then look at the top card of that player's library and exile it face down. You may cast that card for as long as it remains exiled. It is a 3/3. This might be better than Ragavan.
I mean, that... too soon to say. Ragavan is like a perennial all-star card.
Yeah, I mean, Ragavan is... I said it for a long time. I've changed the tune of my fiddle for the present and the time being, but I said it for a long time. Ragavan was... or was the best mana dork in the game. It is card advantage. It's, you know, creates treasures which are infinitely more valuable than just floating mana. So yeah, it may be a bit hasty to say. Maybe I'm dashing on this one, but. Whenever, here's the thing about Rev that I think makes it one of the bigger cards that will influence 2025 is that it does exactly what the biggest decks want to do, which is, hit their opponents. Like, it's funny how combat isn't really this like forefront of our minds as a way to win the game. But it is at the forefront of our minds as a phase in the game that we can generate more advantage, i.e. blue farm, right? It's Timna's jam. That's Timna's whole game, is hitting multiple opponents to draw multiple cards. And yeah, this is like a Timna, like this is Timna's wet dream right here. Where it's whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, you create mana, not a tapped treasure, but an untapped treasure. And then what's even better than Ragavan here is that you get to look at the card, your opponent does not, and you get to exile it face down. So they have no idea what you're taking from them. Where Ragavan, you reveal it, and then if you don't cast it, it goes away forever. But Rev says that you may cast it for as long as it remains exiled. So you can hold counter spells, you can hold things until the timing is right. That is a massive upgrade. The big drawback for Rev is it's four mana. And this is something I keep hearing content creators say over and over again, is that we're in mid-range hell. That CDH is mid-range hell right now. I would love to believe that, because that makes my life better. I don't have to worry about like turbo as much if we're all living in mid-range hell. I just, you know, I'm still wary at times of, well, even though I'm building a deck in CDH that completely revolves around creatures with mana value 4 or greater, and I think it's viable with Helga, Rev isn't built, like, whenever you put it into a deck, the deck's usually, like, Blue Farm isn't built to, you know, like, turbo into something like this, if that makes sense, right? Like, 4 mana is something that's going to, like, significantly hurt you. It's 10% of your life when you hit it off an ad nauseam. You know, it's there are a few things, a few drawbacks with it, but apparently the ceiling is so high, because when I left it off of my top 10 cards of 2024 list, there were a couple people that were like, how could you forget this? This might just be the best card from 2024. So, Flash, you think I'm crazy for criticizing it for being so high on mana value?
No, I mean, listen, man, 4 CMC is a lot in CDH, right?
It, to me, it is.
Like, I think, like, you want a card ideally to be 0 CMC. 1 or 2, you can make an argument for it. Once you get into 3, those slots are real tight. And then when you get to 4 CMC, it's just like, well, is this going to win me the game?
Well, it does. It does it create the foundation? I guess when I see 4, it either, one, has to be something that magnifies what I'm doing already, which if you're talking, you know, Blue Farm or Najeela or whatever, then yes, this is magnifying the effects of your game plan. And I think that it can be justified. Another card we're going to talk about today is 4 mana, but, you know, the format has changed, and it might just be like that whole, the thought with Dockside is that it can't hurt us anymore. So, you know, it's like, it's gone. Maybe, just maybe, we can run 4 mana cards like in CDH if they do enough.
It's just like Ragavan, like the deck, it's 1 mana, you know, versus,
yeah,
now you're talking about 4 mana. Like, it's much easier to include Ragavan than it is, to include a 4 CMC card.
Yeah, there are a lot of high mana value cards that go into decks because you can pitch them, like, you can pitch them to, you know, like, free spells. Like,
Yeah. But I mean, we're not playing like Force of Despair or any of the
great
card spells.
Great,
like,
card.
So if there's blue cards, if a card's blue, there's lots of things you're going to want to pitch it to. Right?
Yep. Yeah, I think that's why.
Not so much for, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's why when you are in blue, like, you can actually, like, push a little bit higher on some, like, vet mana values that are in blue, just because you're like, well, even if I don't get around to it, it is pitch fodder.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, this. Yeah. Oh, the other line of text, right? The Ragavan line of text is great, right? But if you've taught me one thing in playing Magic is, all lines of text matter, and I should read a card fully before just speaking entirely on it. But it also says, whenever you attack, target creature gains death touch until end of turn. It can give itself death touch. It can give Timna death touch. It can give anything. Target creature. It can be a creature your opponent controls. Death touch until end of turn. The big thing with that, in now, if you had printed this card in some sort of green at all, like, This would be, like, I think of Auron Frostfang, where it says attacking creatures you control gain death touch. Whenever they deal damage, you draw a card. This is an effect that's, they were like, yeah, the effect is good to, like, give you card advantage, but how do we disincentivize blocking? What can we do to disincentivize blocking? Oh, This seems great. This is yep, that's the thing. Give the creature death touch. You know, it's for a lesser mana value, this is why, like, I think, like, black cards, even white cards now, and blue has always been really efficient, but green always gets a short straw. This is such a better, stronger effect for less mana and for less intensive cost, like only one pip on this, that, you know, for the basically the same effect, but potentially more than Orrid Frostfang gets. I think that Death Touch line kind of puts it over the top, where in CDH, every card matters. If you're dropping a creature down, it's not just to be a blocker. If you're in token strategies, sure. Raft Top of the Dome, I don't really have many, you know, like decks, you know, like I don't think of many decks that are like very token centric for creatures. Yeah, everything matters. When you play it, it matters. So you're trying to use it to develop some sort of board state and some sort of advantage. And so you're likely not going to attack, or you're not likely not going to block when it comes to Rev coming down and creating a situation where you're going to lose a card, they're going to create mana advantage. Do you risk losing the thing you just you know, potentially wasted your turn playing? Or has that dork proved valuable enough thus far in the game? Is it worth chumping to let this go? So I think Rev has a lot of potential. I'm excited and scared to see this on Sunday. You know, like I feel like this is definitely going to be a card I see, if not, I, you know, a lot of. But your skepticism on whether or not this is better than Ragavan, you know, like, is founded and well founded. I'm in the same boat. That's why I didn't see it right away. It's four mana. But
yeah, almost like, honestly, you get in the CDH tunnel vision when you're doing a set review. I don't mean you. I mean, like, the general you. We're just like, automatically, unless the text "you win the game" is on a card at 4 CMC or higher, you're kind of just breezing past it. Or, you know, unless it's a legendary creature that you want to think about putting in the command zone.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
And here, I mean, Rev is a legendary creature, but mono black. Like, and I don't know, like, if you're going to play mono black in CDH, is a card a better commander than Kirik? You know?
Right. And is the ceiling high enough? And I was looking at it like, this takes the place of something like Grim Hireling. Like, if you're playing.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, like, I think this does take the place of a Grim Hireling in a deck. The same point, it also depends on what is your deck geared to do, because Grim Hireling will put you at 6 treasures for achieving the same thing, where this yields you 3 cards from your opponents and 3 treasures. Information is the most valuable thing that we can have as CDH players. So what level of, you know, yeah, how you value those things, I wouldn't blame you one way or the other. You run this, you run that. But, you know, it's being spoken about, Rev, as though it is going to, like, if you're playing black, you play this. And that is a full stop. Like, that's how good it is. That's how people are valuing it, and it, rightfully so, it's being reflected in its monetary value at $35. So if you would like to pay $35 for this card or buy jumpstart packs,
I think a little of that is stupid, though. I mean, because it's a jumpstart card, and the nature of jumpstart is that people don't open a ton of packs of that,
yeah,
and put the singles out into the world. So if there is a good rare that only has a printing in a Jumpstart set, it's going to jump into that $35, $40 range.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we've seen that before with some other cards.
Yeah, the original.
Was it Emil the Blessed in that range for a while?
Yeah, it was 40.
Kind of reprinting.
Yeah, it was $40. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Emil, the original Tiny Bones was a $50 yep. mythic.
Yep.
Like, I wonder where that's at now. Tiny Bones... Trinket Thief. It's a $25 Jumpstart card. It's never seen a reprint. So I think that once it sees a reprint, I don't think anybody really looks at this card anymore. But it's one of those things that once it sees a reprint, it'll probably go down to like $5 because it'll be accessible. So yeah, that's likely what is going on with Rev as well. Once it's more widely available, I think we would be able to further analyze what it does and what it is doing in the meta. That doesn't change my opinion on how impactful it is going to be in 2025. I think it has a high ceiling. And I do think that it is going to be one of those things you see at the table consistently for the next year. So that's why it makes the cut for one of our top cards of 2025. The next card. You're going to love this one, Flash. And it isn't just because of Glarb. We're talking about Doomsday. I think Doomsday is on its way back into the spotlight. Glarb has just stirred the pot a little bit on this one. If you are unfamiliar with Doomsday, lovely, lovely card. Beautiful artwork with Mystery Booster 2. The OG with that Future Sight frame. Ugh! It's gorgeous. But Doomsday is 3 black mana, and it's a sorcery, that says search your library and graveyard for 5 cards and exile the rest. Put the chosen cards on top of your library in any order. You lose half your life. Round it up. Half your life? Oh no! Huge cost there. But not as high as ad nauseum from time to time. I do think Doomsday is turning the corner to be relevant again. You know, it's
perennial combo piece in multiple formats, you know. It had just fallen out of favor in CDH until recently again.
Yeah, it fell out of the limelight and it was just overlooked for, you know, until a commander that came out that said tap Surveil 2, you know, and you can cast spells off the top of your library if they're mana value 4 or greater. That also does it.
And you know, the reason it fell out of favor, it's just such an all-in card. Like, at least if you're ad nauseing or appearing into the abyss or, you know, another one of those high-risk, high-reward black cards or like Necropotence, there's, you know, you can mitigate against being blown out on the spot. Like Doomsday, and with the exception of like a well manicured like pile and interaction with Glarb, you're saying I am trying to win the game
right now
or the next turn. You have to stop me. There's no other reason to be Doomsdaying than saying I'm trying to win the game right now.
Yep. Yeah, that's. It's exactly what it is. It is a I am attempting to win card. Like, that is the alarms that it sets off in your opponent's minds when you put it on the stack. So justified that, yeah, I'm going to choose 5 cards, put them on my library, and I likely have a way to pick one of them up. And that's usually all it takes, is if you can pick one up, that you have access to the rest of the pile. So that's ultimately the construction. I went through, I'll include this link in the description below. It is in depth, but on Tapped Out, there is an entire, someone went through and put an entire EDH Doomsday primer together of piles and descriptions below. It would take us 4 years, literally 4 years, and Don Cheadle would not approve of that for us to go through this. it is so, there's a lot of depth to it. I mean,
there's lots of ways you can win the game of Magic the Gathering if you have access to a handful of your best cards.
Yes.
All selected for you. You know, like that is the power of Doomsday. But the downside, again, is that it's all in and it's happening right now.
Yep.
Whereas Necropotence, you can refill your hand again. Ad Nauseam, you got a bunch of redundancy in your hands. Like, it's just all of it. It's the greediest of the black card draw perennials, you know?
And maybe that's why I see it as potentially a card that will have this resurgence this year, is because of this mid-range hell, you know, in this slowing of the format has come down. You know, what it's come down to is win second. And Rog'Sai was this deck that just, well, it is a glass cannon all in all the time type deck that just seeks to push for the win. And like that has, there's room for that in the format. And like it's one of those things where I am almost at the point where playing Turbo is a good idea. Like, if you can push for the win right away and people aren't, like, sometimes people mulligan for the hand that sets them up the best, not the hand that keeps them from losing. If that makes sense.
Yeah, like, I agree. Yeah,
like, you'll set up, I'll be like, all right, a turn one Wild Growth into a turn, what will result in a turn two Rhystic Study. I'll keep that. That's good. And I'll lose on turn one to, you know, Rog'Sai or something. I've lost to, this isn't because it lives rent-free in my head, but I've lost to Obnixilis on turn two, you know, because I didn't keep the first hand that I had like Force of Vigor and stuff like that in it, which would have kept us from losing. But I mullied it, even though I had enough mana or whatever, you know, I had lands to set myself up, and I also had the Force of Vigor to protect us. I didn't think it was good enough to set me up for the mid game. I mulled it away, and I regretted it because it ended up losing us the game. And you know, it's just like one of those things where, yeah, sometimes players will just mulligan away their interaction in favor of, you know, a better shot at winning on turn three or four. But Doomsday, I do believe, is a card that can make a resurgence because decks are so focused on the mid game that it can push and win it, you know, like a Dark Ritual or Dark Ritual on turn one. And then you go, you know, into a Doomsday and turn two, all you gotta do is pick up a card and you have access to your whole pile. Like, hey, sign me up. That usually means I win the game. So that's, yes, you will sound the alarm, but it's so early in the game that the whole table will talk and they will say, do you have anything? Do you have anything? Do you have anything? Can we find something? Can we do something about that? Like, that's why I think Doomsday has this window. It can shoot the gap and you can win the game more frequently with it in today's CDH than you can in last year's CDH, and even in 2023, it was pretty irrelevant. And in 2024, it didn't, you know, this whole Dockside-less meta, you know, you're without Jeweled Lotus, the format has slowed, so many things have become relevant, and like we still are seeing what is shaking out. Doomsday is rising and rising and coming up the list. You know, Glarb is one commander to come out of it that has magnified the power of Doomsday. You know, it's just, I think there are other decks that can use it to win. Full stop. That's the end of my sentence. the other card that I think goes along with it really, like, is Valley Floodcaller. You know, you're able to cast non-creature spells at instant speed or with flash. If you're in blue, blue and black. Valley Flood Caller is now almost, well, I would say now is a staple if you're playing blue. So I think Doomsday then becomes this instant speed on your end step. I will cast this, select my five, go into it. That also helps you navigate through this mid-range format that we're now seeing, this slower format, is put a Valley Flood Caller down, cast it at the opportunity that suits you best, and then win the game. Win on top. Valley Flood Caller allows for that. So, Flash, any final thoughts on Doomsday?
No, it might be a future card of the week, man, if it continues to develop.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're on to something here. Doomsday's a really cool card. It's from Weatherlight originally, so it's had a lot of time in just, it's been out for a long time, you know. It's just sometimes we forget about old cards, and they're super strong. They're super powerful. All right, our final card, our list of most influential cards going into 2025, considering that it is mid-range hell, the worst card, well, not the worst card on the list, but potentially the best card, the most nightmare-inducing card, it's Smothering Tithe, another 4-mana card in CEDH. For all of our criticism before, this one doesn't seem like it's an overpay. It's three.
I mean, it's going to pay for itself in half a turn cycle.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
Yep. It's 3 and a white for an enchantment that says whenever an opponent draws a card, that player may pay 2 colorless mana or 2 generic mana. If the player doesn't, you create a treasure token. Yeah. It's a 2-for-1 in mana for every time they draw a card. So this, I think when it originally released, Smothering Tithe was $7 or $8. And this was Ravnica or Guilds of Ravnica. I can't remember exactly. Ravnica Allegiance is what it was. And this was like, it took a couple weeks for people to identify it, because then it was all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, Smothering Tithe is a $10 card. And then you go, what? Why is it $10? And then they're like, oh yeah, Smothering Tithe, great card, $20. And you're like, what? And then you're like, 40. And it just got out of hand really quick. And then all of a sudden we see all these reprints for it, and it now hovers around $25 to $30 for all of these, whatever variant you want. But that is, like, I like, and I think it makes sense to tie monetary value to the power of a card, or at least its playability, is, you know, it's like, damn, this is a $30 card. Like, this must see a lot of play. But the 2-for-1 you get on mana here is huge in CDH. 1 mana, just gaining 1 mana. You can tap out for Smothering Tithe and pass the turn. And then your opponent, and this is the big thing, this is the political thing about Smothering Tithe that I love, is that if you are all responsible and pay it, Smothering Tithe is the best card in the game, because you have just set your opponents back 2 turns because they have 2 less mana to do what they want to do during their turn.
Yeah, so, I feel like Smothering Tithe, it's a win-win card. You know, mm-hmm. You should not be casting the card hoping to be getting specifically mana generation. You're casting it because it's good if you get the tokens, or if you're like preventing your opponents from using their mana to win the game.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And
it's there, like, it's there for every line of text every time, I think.
Yeah, because even though the line of text is, it seems pretty straightforward, right? if you don't pay this when you draw a card, I will get this. But there's so many other effects that it has on the overall shape of the game. Just in the way that, like...
What card are you going to say? Because I'm going to say something. I have a card in mind, too.
Please, go ahead.
Similar to... Well, for me, it's similar to Rhystic Study. We all understand that, like, Rhystic Study is incredibly powerful, and you should not let it hit the board, and that you should, if at all possible, always pay.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, be responsible.
It is responsible playing to not feed the fish, right? And the thing is, we know that generating treasure... We also know that generating treasure tokens is not as powerful as drawing cards. Just, like, flat out, not even conditional. Drawing cards is better than treasure tokens, right? They're both very good, but one is better than the other. So we know that Smothering Tithe is a card that is the white version of Rhystic Study, essentially. But we also know that it's somewhere less good than Rhystic Study. It costs one more mana. The effect is slightly less powerful. We also know that it still needs to be respected, right? And so it's this weird space where I think it's a harder card. I think that Rhystic Study is more powerful, but Smothering Tithe is a harder card to play into.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going. My thoughts were at was that this is so much harder to play around than Rhystic Study is, where you can restrict yourself one mana, hold that mana, pay for the Rhystic, because you do not want to give your opponents cards. This plays into a different, like, sense of greed, right? Like, this is a little bit greedier, where you go, the fucker across the table is not going to pay it. Why do I pay it? He's not going to pay. Why would I pay, right? No, you can have the treasure. That is the most common line you'll hear after you resolve a Smothering Tithe is, no, you can have it. Like, I'm not paying two. Two? Two? If it was one, Smothering Tithe would be dead in the water. Like, but two? There's no way. Like, it's the difference between Ward 1 and Ward 2. Like, it's massive. So
Ward 1 is nothing. Ward 2 is backbreaking. Like,
absolutely, yeah.
No, it's huge. Like, one mana makes a difference.
Yep. And it's taxing in a way that you can ignore the tax. But if an opponent taps out to play Smothering Tithe, I would bet you they have a one mana instant in their hand that they are hoping that you give them the mana that they can cast it and disrupt what you're doing. So an array of one mana instants. You know, you can Swan Song, Fluster Storm, even an Enlightened Tutor. Into the Flood Maw, yeah. Like, the tutors, Vampiric Tutor, Worldly Tutor, Mystic Tutor, like, something to give them, like, or set them up or disrupt what is going on the board, you know. So, like, Smothering Tithe, there's a lot that goes into the thought process of when it's played, how quickly it comes out onto the field. It, like, later in the game, it comes down. You're probably not going to get a lot out of it, but most of the time it's just enough. This is the best way to generate mana in a format without Dockside Extortionist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, played on curve or ahead of curve, it is going to warp the game.
Yeah. Yeah, even, I would say, even though it's not pitchable, right? It's one of those 4-mana cards that's not pitchable, just like
Red. Solitude gets played, right?
That's true. Yeah, Solitude and Creature Shells, like, I'm playing it. I'm playing both Smothering Tithe and Solitude in the Helga deck, but I guess I would pitch a Smothering Tithe for the right scenario, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's all that matters.
In general, on the pitching conversation that we're having today, it's got to have blue in it. It's got to be a blue card.
Yeah, there are some cards that just...
worth pitching.
Yeah, there are just some cards that see play just because they're blue. Like, they're not incredibly powerful. Like, I'm looking at one on my screen right now, Gitaxian.
Misdirection. I think Misdirection gets played a lot because it being pitchable puts it over the edge, right?
True. True. Like, while you can pitch something to Misdirection, it is also pitchable.
Or Muddle the Mixture, I think, gets in conversation there. Like, people are like, well, I'll play Muddle the Mixture. It fetches some stuff, and there's enough modes here now. Like, it also being pitchable is one of the things in the basket that makes it playable.
Yeah, for a while, I can't remember what card it was, but there was a card that was just, for the longest time, to me, was like, yeah, if you know, it has upside, but it's basically just there to be pitched. You know, when I'm not in blue and I'm, you know, playing, I think when I was playing Shalayan Halar, like, I had, you know, like, having Cinder Vines in the deck is great because it's pitchable to Force of Vigor, and it's mm-hmm. at the time there was a period in time when I was playing Pyrokinesis because of the red damage that would trigger the red terror, and I needed cards mm-hmm. to pitch, and I was like, oh, that does both. Oh, sweet. You know, so yeah, it's like, even though it's not, you know, Smothering Tithe, pitchable to Solitude and pretty much nothing else. You're right. It is definitely played. Smothering Tithe is just the most, when it played ahead of curve, is the most backbreaking enchantment that I can think of in Magic.
Yeah, pretty much like the same as like a turn one Rhystic. If you play a turn one, turn two, Smothering Tithe, I think you're setting yourself up to, the game is yours to lose at that point.
Yeah, you know? Even if you're starting later in turn order.
If you're looking at the percentages on the game being broadcast, it's like you got a 90% chance to win the game right now.
Yeah, in turn order plays a lot into this. Like, mm-hmm. That is something to consider. We've seen now, and this is a different topic, maybe a conversation for a different day, but it's now we're seeing that turn order has more influence on the outcome of the game, or turn mm-hmm. one actually is like, if you're player in first seat, your chances of winning since the bans were announced has increased by like 6-ish%, which is massive. That is a massive change. And like, so basically if you're first in turn order, the game is yours to lose at that point. So you better mully aggressively. But if you're able to, if you're, let's say, seat three, and you can turn one a Smothering Tithe, you have just upended the statistics. Like, mm-hmm. it is now, you are now in the driver's seat. I guess that is something that Dockside did, that was, if people were going ham with their, you know, fast mana and like really just generating a board state in their first turn or second turn, even, Dockside would punish that and like would give players later in turn order the opportunity to catch up and win the game, or, you know, yeah. But it's just too, it was too combo centric. It was too, yeah, it killed too many decks. So hasta la vista. See you later, Dockside. Goodbye. And now that it's gone, things like Smothering Tithe come up. And now that is, like, I think this, if I'm going to pick one of these three, I think Smothering Tithe becomes like the number one most influential card of 2025 as we, you know, as we start to see results flow in from tournaments.
So you think, like, if, is this going to become, because I don't think it's there now. I don't think it's there right now where it's an auto include if you're have access to white.
I think it's going to be. I think it's,
you think
there.
It's going to be there in 2025.
Yeah, I think that as we enter, like, as we enter 2025, if it's not in your list and you're running white, I think that you should be finding a cut for it, and you should be seeing if you're on Mana Vault, right? If you're on Mana Vault, you're on some sort of artifact package that generates fast mana, or you have a way to play this ahead of curve, potentially on turn two, Smothering Tithe is your card. That if you have the potential for it, boom, here it is. Hello. Creature shells also becoming far, far more widely played in CEDH as well. So if you're in white, like we talked about Solitude, Smothering Tithe is pitchable to that. If for whatever reason the cost is just egregious, this is it. That you can, yep, it has multi-purpose now, you know. But landing it is more important than anything. Hold the game down, stacks it out, I don't know. But if you can get to Smothering Tithe and still have the game go around the table one more time, Smothering Tithe is going to put you in a position that is ahead of everybody else, or at least catches you up, even if you're falling behind. All right, final thoughts on this, Flash, Smothering Tithe?
No.
Doomsday?
Nope.
Rev?
Yes. No.
All right. Well, this concludes this episode of the Mox Stars podcast. If you would like to leave your thoughts, let us know where we're at with the whole thing. Give us some feedback. You can do so on YouTube. Leave us a comment on the video. You can like, subscribe, and ring the bell for more notifications. But maybe just let us relish in this 420 subscribers for just... Okay, long enough. Hit the subscribe button. Change that number. Make it grow. We're almost to 500, y'all. You can also find us on all major podcasting platforms. You can leave us a 5-star review, make us look super duper cool, and support us on Patreon by becoming an official Pepperhead for $3 a month. You can become an official Pepperhead, support the show, have your name turned Dr. Pepperhead on the Discord server. We also have a Discord server. Jump on there, join the conversation. You can also leave your feedback there for the channel. I've been trying to like poke and get as much help as I can on this Helga deck. So if you have any opinions, you want to check out the list, you can do so. I've been trying to get some feedback on the Bant channel. We'll see what we come down with. Man, I'm so nervous for Sunday. You can also support us not only by being an official Pepperhead, but by being a cherry vanilla Pepperhead, like maybe Anthony, KB, Mono Greg, Draw for Turn, Jacob Hibbard, Tommy Cypher, Demon 82, K Mr. K, Will Rule, and UWP Quirks. That's a $5 a month tier, gains you access to our bi-weekly giveaways, which we'll be doing next week. And I'm going to make it a can cap and a copy of this Helga deck. And proxy copy of this Helga deck. Deck box sleeves and the goods. Flash, closing remarks about Don Cheadle, Vin Diesel, the Tasmanian Devil, or LeBron's fake family?
I don't think we have time for it.
Do you have that many thoughts?
On all of those subjects.
All right.
Every single one of those subjects.
On next week's show, then. Thank you so much for listening. This has been the Mox Stars podcast, the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. Thank you so much for listening. Peace.
Bye.